Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now we'll do something a little different with two special guests. Gerald Maserati was editor of the New York Times Magazine when he decided to take up tennis seriously in his mid-50s. He's now 63. One of his mentors was the life coach and senior circuit tennis champion, Bob Litwin. As it turns out, Bob Litwin and Gerald Maserati show up in each other's new books. So let's compare notes. Gerald Maserati's book is called Late to the Ball: Age, Learn, Fight, Love, Play Tennis, Win. Bob Litwin's book is called Live the Best Story of Your Life, A World Champion's Guide to Lasting Change. So we'll talk about age, we'll talk about mastery of skills and of yourself, and we'll get to the U.S. Open, too, which is now underway in Queens, and how to watch it for maximum enjoyment, even with no Roger Federer. Bob Litwin, Jerry Maserati, great to have both of you here. Welcome to WNYC.
Hey, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Hey.
Bob, your book is blurbed by Billie Jean King, among others, but not that many people know about your championship tennis career. Can you talk about the context of that and how you got there to kind of introduce yourself?
Sure. I was teaching tennis, actually, and I was sort of frustrated by the fact that people were not doing what I suggested they do, and they were saying, it's difficult. So I decided I better play some tournaments. So at the age of about 32, I started to play some tournaments. Lost a lot, but started to find my way, started working on using mental skills primarily, and over time I started to win, and I ended up getting all the way to the top. I was ranked number one in the world, actually, in the 55 and over, and it was mostly because of paying attention to what was going on inside my head more than anything.
And now you're a tennis coach, but also a more general life coach, working with all kinds of people. Did you go from tennis self-improvement to generalist, or the other way around?
I went from tennis to other sports of which I knew nothing, and then I was dragged into the world of Wall Street. So I work primarily with traders and analysts, which is pretty similar to sports, actually.
How so?
Well, there's obviously focus is really important, very important for traders and analysts to be able to let go of the past quickly, as athletes have to do. Staying relaxed while making decisions under pressure, big decisions in their world. So it's very similar.
And Jerry, how did you come to meet Bob in the context of your decision to take up tennis in your 50s?
I had a colleague at the New York Times who, when he found out I was taking lessons and trying to get serious about tennis, mentioned that he knew Bob and that Bob was a senior champion. And I went out to hit with Bob actually maybe 3 or 4 years ago, right before the U.S. Open. And, you know, I marveled at his tennis game. You know, I was a neophyte, and he clearly was somebody who knew how to play tennis. And then he told me about his, you know, his method, his sort of approach, this idea of that the brain is a really important muscle in tennis, and that you better, you know, get control of it and develop it, and your emotions and your attitudes are just as important as your technique and your, you know, your physical ability. So I got with the program, and we had a couple of months of working together, and I think it sort of paid off.
I think it sort of paid off. You're not going to put that one on the back of your book.
We're still
well,
working on
it.
What
I mean is, I took in everything Bob had to say. I just don't know that I, you know, the amount of improving as much as you can improve in your 50s and 60s, the degree of improvement is not going to be what it is for an 18-year-old athlete.
But let me drill down on that, because one of Bob's quotes in your book is, there are a few things I'm hearing. One is, I can't adapt. That's a bad story. We're going to have to work on that. And, Bob, you put a lot of things in terms of stories and storytelling for tennis players, for traders, all kinds of people. How so in Jerry's case?
Well, I mean, when I met Jerry and we had lunch after playing, he had said to me, like, so what do you think? And I said, like, what do I think about what? And he said, my game, what do you think? And I said, well, what is it you're trying to accomplish? And he said, I want to win a match in a national tournament. And I said, well, okay, what is it that's going on that keeps you from that? And he told me a series of things, that including I don't adapt, I don't like playing friends, I'm too quick, I'm not patient enough when playing. So I said to him, like, well, that's your story. How's that working for you? At which point he said, not very well. And the art of storytelling is really quite simple. I mean, you flip the story, even if it's not who you are. And I said, well, okay, how about having infinite patience? Is that your story? No. But what about working towards it and looking for opportunities throughout the day to work on patience in smaller ways, not tennis necessarily? Or the same thing with adaptation. I mean, look for opportunities in which you can adapt during the day, and you're training that muscle for the bigger moments. So I put everything in terms of that. People come to me all the time. They tell me, they don't tell me their good stories. They tell me why they can't. And I just say, well, if that's not working for you, let's flip it and get to work on it incrementally.
Jerry, how do you remember that story about your story?
Well, I think Bob's got it right. I mean, one of the things that happens when you take up something new in life, later in life, is that it calls on different qualities and different skills than you had before. And, you know, my impatience, I believe, served me well as a journalist for close to four decades. It's an impatient profession. But impatience is a real liability on a tennis court. And Bob made me aware of that and sort of taught me how to have other components to build a new story about, as he said, you know, becoming more patient. It doesn't mean I am a completely patient person now, but I have a consciousness of my impatience when I'm on a tennis court, and I slow down and I breathe deeply and I try to become more patient. And then when that works, that reinforces what Bob had told me. So in that sense, his advice has been key.
Our guest, Gerald Maserati, whose new book is called Late to the Ball, Age, Learn, Fight, Love, Play Tennis, Win. And Bob Litman, whose new book is called Live the Best Story of Your Life, A World Champion's Guide to Lasting Change. And they appear in each other's books, and you're hearing why. 212-433-WNYC. If you want to enter this story in any way, this conversation on age, which we barely touched on, but we'll do more, on age and existential reality, on tennis, on mastery, on who you're a fan of on the pro circuit. We'll talk about Roger Federer and others in a minute on this first day of the main part of the U.S. Open. 212-433-WNYC. Enter wherever you like. 212-433-9692. Jerry, the Times review of your book by Jay Jennings, combined with his reviews of two other tennis books, was something of a muse on Roger Federer. His style of tennis as being transcendent, for being, quote, airier and less muscle-bound than other kinds. He made tennis beautiful again, is another quote. And Federer as a platonic ideal. Whoa. Are you a Federer worshiper, too, for what sounds like high ideals that maybe in a certain way go beyond tennis?
I love Roger Federer's tennis game, and I love his comportment on the court and off the court. And he was a brought back to tennis a certain beauty along with all the power and that and. He's been a great, great thing for tennis. I don't love him or his game to the exclusion of other players. I'm not someone who loves a player and then therefore hates his rivals or that. I don't have that kind of feeling for tennis in the way I do when I root for the Mets or the New York Giants football team.
Bob, same question.
Well, I think that what Roger did that was just extraordinary was he took our sport to a whole other level in terms of who do you need to be? What kind of person do you need to be? And he and Nadal in particular, they raised the bar about how you can be an extraordinary person and then also be an extraordinary athlete. They obviously, as great tennis players, they had a soapbox. But both of them really, really stepped up, in my opinion, and they've taught others, like Novak Djokovic, who at the beginning was, you know, a little bit, you know, not liked quite as well for some of the way he acted. Total transition. Said, those guys set the bar for me. This is how you have to be a champion. And, I think it's great for sports in general. I think the tennis is right now up there, and other athletes should be spending time with Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal, Andy Murray, Novak Djokovic. These guys really are different than other athletes.
On how to be a good person, contributing to your being a good tennis player, does this relate at all to the conversation that's in the news right now about the quarterback, Colin Kaepernick, out of his principles, not standing for the national anthem because people are oppressed in America? Or is this a totally separate category from that?
I think that football players and basketball players can learn a lot by looking at what the top athletes in tennis are doing. And I've always felt, at least for myself and for the people I've coached, that, you know, people want to be better at tennis. And I say, if you're better at life, if your life is good, your tennis is likely to be good. You may not win that much, but you'll be playing great tennis.
Jerry, do you want to get in on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, athletes have a complicated relationship to politics, and it's very tricky to use that position in ways that often spill over into real life. I think if you can do it in an authentic way, I think it's great. If it's perceived as why are you the person taking this particular stand, I think it gets into tricky territory. And, you know, they're young men. They've been singularly, and women, singularly focused. They need such focus to become great, and they're 21 or 22 years old, and it's just a tricky area for them.
Steve in Inwood, you're on WNYC with Bob Litwin and Jerry Maserati. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm in my mid-40s, and I'm returning to tennis, you know, after decades. And one of the obstacles I've found, particularly on the city courts here, is that they tend to be pretty cliquish. So I'm having trouble finding tennis partners, you know, people, around my skill level, you know, hopefully slightly better than me to play with. And I was wondering whether either of you had any suggestions, about how to get in the game fully and, you know, find hitting partners and competitors.
I know there are some websites where you can find matches, both for the Inwood courts. I happen to live in the neighborhood too, so I'm familiar with this a little bit, but also, around Manhattan. Bob, is this up your alley at all? Do you know?
Well, I could say that I was in the industry for a long time, and I do have an issue with the pecking order that goes on because, look, the reality is most people want to play with people better than them. They don't want to play with people below them. But then, obviously, if you're in the middle of that, you're asking to play with better people. So I've always encouraged people to reach behind them and drag somebody up. It's a very tricky thing. I think that those in the industry need to educate people a little bit more about being welcoming to those that are coming up in the game. But I found the best way for me to be playing with people that were in my level or higher was I entered tournaments. I mean, I wasn't very good at it, but I was guaranteed to play people that were the level that I wanted to be playing against.
There are open ladder tournaments in New York City that you can enter,
right,
if you're willing to travel around, at least around Manhattan, if not to other boroughs a little bit. And I would, go Google, find tennis partners in New York City. Bob?
Yeah, and it's interesting. When I always encourage people to play tournaments, they say, well, they take place over 2 weekends, and I don't have all that time. And I said, don't worry. You probably won't be playing the second weekend for the first year. And when you finally do, you will find a way to do it. You'll love it.
All right, Steve, good luck. We're going to take a break, and we'll continue. And I actually want to get some thoughts from you guys about how to watch the U.S. Open for maximum enjoyment as it begins today. And I will also ask... both of you, certainly Jerry, considering your book, do you have to more embrace the fact that we're all going to die eventually or more shut it out of your mind? to be successful at something new at 60 years old. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with two great guests, Gerald Maserati, former editor of the New York Times Magazine, currently a tennis writer for The New Yorker and the author of a new book, Late to the Ball, Age, Learn, Fight, Love, Play Tennis, Win, about his own decision to pick up tennis and try to do it really seriously, starting in his 50s. He's now 63. And Bob Litwin, whose book is called Live the Best Story of Your Life, A World Champion's Guide to Lasting Change. And we can take your phone calls for them on any of this array of intersecting topics that we're talking about. Age, existential reality, tennis, mastery. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. By the way, they'll be doing a joint book signing at the U.S. Open tomorrow, 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon at the U.S. Open Bookstore for both Bob and Jerry, if you happen to be going out there to watch some tennis. Bob, you were just telling me off the air the story of how you discovered that you were in each other's books.
Well, it was interesting. You know, we had met, we played, we did these Skype sessions together a few times, and then about maybe a year later, I get an email from Jerry saying, hey, here's the draft of my book. I'd like you to do some fact-checking, go to page whatever it was. So I open it up, and I see there's an entire chapter on the work that we did. I was shocked. Meantime, I had been in the writing my book over 5 years, and I had included him in my book. It was just a really weird coincidence. So here we were in each other's books, and then we've kind of coordinated as our books came out within 1 month of each other. So here we are doing a few things together. It's kind of fun, and we're building our relationship.
Jerry, what's your side of that story?
Well, it's as Bob said, and you know, we also have had the pleasure of spending a couple of weekends together at something called the U.S. Tennis Congress, which brings together a lot of people every year, like me, who are older but serious about their tennis. And we'll be gathering again in October in Tucson to hit tennis balls and learn and have some fun.
Tim in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tim. Tim, you there?
Joe, yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hi, now you're on. Hi.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the show. Thank you for taking my call. And I have a question for Bob. I'm a longtime tennis player. I'm actually a pretty good tennis player. I've been as high as a 5-0 rated player, and I'm 56 years old. To this day, I suffer from high anxiety, even not in competition, just when hitting balls, even in warm-up, from hitting a forehand. And I'm just wondering, I see, obviously, the inner game of tennis, and, you know, you can Google Brad Gilbert. Just where would you steer someone in my predicament as a first step to address this anxiety? And I also like what you said about flipping the story, and I'm pondering that as I listen to the show. But where would you steer me address this problem?
You got a client here.
Oh, great. Well, first of all, you're probably the first person who's felt anxiety playing tennis, so this will be brand new for me. But basically, I rarely tell people what they're supposed to do. It starts off with you flipping the story. So you say you're very anxious. I would say start off flipping a story, write it out that is very short that says, I'm a master of managing my anxiety. That's your story. Then look for opportunities in the day where you might feel anxious, where what would you do if you were somebody who were a master of managing anxiety? You have any thoughts about something you might do if you were anxious about something?
Got it. All right. That's a good first step.
No, he
that's
wants you to answer
I'm
the question.
Curious. What would you do? What would you tell one of your kids or a friend if they were anxious? What
right.
would
you? I would tell them to look at the situation, and you know, there's obviously a rational way to address it without all the added energy, and work through it. And that the energy gets in the way, it clouds the waters.
Okay, well, that's a step. And I would spend a little bit more time figuring out what you might tell others to do who are anxious, whether it's like a child who's crying, you might tell them to take a deep breath. And maybe one deep breath could be the beginning of you managing your anxiety, and you build from there. But look for little situations where you're anxious, not the biggest ones.
Look who's calling in. It's our former All Things Considered host, Amy Eddings, who now lives in Ohio, and as many of you may remember, is a big tennis player and tennis fan, and she did tennis reporting, among the other things that she did on the station when she was here. And, oh, by the way, she referred us to Bob for this segment. Hi, Amy.
Hi there, Brian. It's so great to talk to you on this U.S. Open Day and to hear two of my favorite people, Jerry and Bob, chatting with you about tennis.
I can't believe I'm hearing your voice.
I know, right? Isn't that cool? The magic of radio.
So what do you want to say? You want to talk about aging?
I do, because I find it... So here are two guys who are masters of managing their story around aging. And as I get older, I find myself saying, you know, there's all sorts of stories about that, right? That well, I can't do that. And, oh, I can't go for that ball. Or, oh, I'm one step slower. And it emerges as an excuse, and it emerges as a reason to not play tennis anymore, not go full out. And I'm wondering, Bob and Jerry, how you manage that with your own bodies. Bob, I know you went through a tremendous injury and came back from injury. And what was the story you told yourself through that? And I'm also interested in framing it as the point of view from the U.S. Open, right? You hear a lot of conversation around Roger Federer and even Serena Williams about their legacy and whether you see them switching what they do on the court or switching their stories from I want to be number one to I want to win a certain amount of major titles and leave a certain legacy, and how that impacts their game.
Bob?
Well, I haven't spent time with Roger or Serena, but Roger has consistently said over the last 5 or 6 years, I love playing the game, I love being around the players, I love training, and that his emphasis is not as much on winning as the rest of us, I have a feeling. I mean, I think every time he goes out there, he wants to win. But I think that he loves the experience, and that as long as he loves the experience, he keeps playing. I know for me, I feel like for every step I lose, I get a little bit wiser. So as I get older, I'm a better player in terms of understanding the geometry of the court, where I need to hit it so that I can really avoid having to run quite the distance. And don't forget, Amy, if you're smart, you play age group tennis, where the person on the other side of the net is your age. So the relative loss of speed is not that great. But, you know, with me, Amy, it's like... any bad story you've got to me, that's like, for me, it's like, that's what I love about the game. Everything you don't like about it, I love.
Right.
Still playing, Amy?
Yeah, actually, I'm starting to get back into playing after having a really negative story around it for a long time, one that says that I'm incapable of doing this without having, you know, major drama and meltdown. And the story that I'm telling myself now is, I'm on the court to play a game, and I'm finding a lot of playfulness around that and fun in terms of, you know, it's no longer about mastery. It's about playing the game and hitting the ball. I'm sitting here pulled over, Brian, on the side of a road in my red pickup truck, and people think I've broken down. These friendly Ohioans are stopping to help me.
As you know, that would never happen here. Amy, thanks. And I'm glad you brought playing into it, and great to hear your voice, because I was framing it as aging and mastery and tennis. But, Jerry, I think for you it really was that playfulness was not enough. You wanted to go out there and be a 60-year-old who was mastering something, yes?
Yes. I guess I would put it slightly differently. I wanted to have the feeling of improving, which I don't think I was. It had been many, many years since I felt I improved at anything, and this was going to be maybe my last, you know, here I was milling around in the ante room of the aged. This was going to be my last shot to improve at something. So,
do you, because we're going to run out of time here, and I want to ask you, since we're all going to die eventually, do you have to more embrace that, or more shut it out of your mind to be a successful 60-year-old?
If you read the book, you'll find out I've been death-haunted since around the age of three. So that hasn't changed much for me. What I do feel like when I'm out on the court is, and there are a few other times in my life I feel this way, I feel totally present. I feel like I am just completely here. And to the extent I can feel I'm completely here, I can shut those kinds of thoughts out of my mind.
Give us the last word on that same question, Bob.
The last word, the word is Shoshin. And Shoshin is a word that means child's mind, beginner's mind. And that was something that Jerry and I talked about, that if you can find that wow factor, the wonder, when you go out and play, you're in a state of presence. And you may win, you may lose, you may have missed some shots, but I mean, that's part of the game that you're playing. But to be present, that's so is where it's at when you're playing this game.
Bob Litwin's book is called Live the Best Story of Your Life, A World Champion's Guide to Lasting Change. Gerald Maserati's book is called Late to the Ball, Age, Learn, Fight, Love, Play Tennis, Win. They discovered that they were both writing about the other, and yes, they both actually appear in each other's books, these new books. They'll be doing a joint book signing at 4 o'clock tomorrow at the U.S. Open. So if you happen to be going to the Open, 4 o'clock at the bookstore at the U.S. Open tomorrow. And what a pleasure. Bob, Jerry, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.